Trigger warning. This podcast is intended for men. Not boys, not babies, men.
This is how we disable toxic masculinity.
We need to kill all men.
This pagan patriarchalism that is coming back out of the shadows.
Feminists hate patriarchy.
It's the woman that runs the show and the woman that runs the community and is the backbone of their area.
I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman.
Patriarchy.
You are male privilege.
Are you saying you have authority over me? Go eat your superior!
I personally can't see why egalitarianism would be a bad thing.
The assumption that wives should make babies instead of money is part of the patriarchy.
Don't f***ing say hi to strange women you don't know.
Patriarchy.
The patriarchy.
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 Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. That is Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. You are on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, and you are listening to The Patriarchy. My name is Tony DePonte, and I am, as always, joined by my co-host, Pastor Joseph Randall Spurgeon.
Woman, get back in here and make me a sandwich.
Joseph, what you eating?
I'm eating a homophobic sandwich. Yeah, it's actually quite afraid of homosexuals. At least that's what I hear. It's also known as the sandwich of Christians everywhere. So if you haven't guessed it, I'm eating everybody's favorite place, Chick-fil-A.
That sounds good right now. That sounds really good right now. I feel like I should pause the episode, go and eat it. Well, I actually did have chicken too. I also had, I had barbecue chicken, shredded barbecue chicken. And that was actually not made by my wife. It was made by a friend of mine's wife. She has brought us over food since we just had our baby. It was very good. It was very tasty.
Nice. You've worked it out, so even other people's wives are cooking you food.
Well, this is the patriarchy, after all. No, she's a good lady. She takes good care of us, and she's been real kind, and she's always finding us at church and making sure that we're good to go and we don't need anything. So I appreciate her.
Awesome. Well, what do we got? What do we got going this week?
Well, we have one of our new segments, our second edition of this new segment.
Feminism ruins everything.
So today, this comes from The Guardian.
Dress it up, subvert it, deny it all you want. Marriage is an institution that has curtailed women's freedom for centuries. But instead of rejecting the patriarchal and outdated tradition, some feminists have decided to reclaim it. We may have progressed since the Industrial Revolution, where Mary Wollstonecraft described marriage as little more than a state of legal prostitution. But let's not kid ourselves. Even today, marriage is not about equality. It's about perpetuating male privilege. Being given away by your father may seem cute and romantic, but it stems from a time when women were seen literally as their father's and then their husband's property. The majority of brides still opt for a white gown.
Beautiful? Yes, indeed.
But the implication that brides should be virgins is both ludicrous and insulting to women.
What?
Wait, why?
Why? Were we just saying women have no self-control? Is that why? I mean...
It's ludicrous.
It's ludicrous. It's insulting. It's insulting to say that a woman can control herself and save herself for her husband. That's ludicrous. Ugh.
That a female who has had sex is somehow spoilt goods goes against everything feminists claim to stand for. I know feminists who've taken their husband's name because they say it's easier. Easier than changing your passport, email address, utilities bills and bank account details, I suppose.
Wait, I've watched this video before and I remember thinking at the same time, like, Because, I mean, it's true feminism, right? She's saying that you should have separate accounts for everything, right? And
you're basically being branded. So anyone who sees your name knows immediately who you belong to. Even if a woman does away with all these traditions, accept it. Marriage can never be a feminist act. It has formed the backdrop to women's oppression for centuries, and it continues to do so. Forced marriage, child brides and polygamy all show how human rights violations of women and girls all too often go hand in hand with marriage. It was not until 1991 that rape in marriage was made a criminal offence in England and Wales.
Oh, she's going here. Oh, goodness.
Notice how she trots out like the most extreme thing,
right,
child brides and polygamy.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then she goes to this whole rape thing. I've heard this argument before, and it's the most flimsy, stupid argument.
And today, it's still perfectly legal for a man to rape his wife in 47 countries worldwide.
No, it's not. Just because there's no law that distinctly says you can't rape your wife doesn't mean there's no anti-rape laws.
So if you want to get married, then just get on with it. But please stop pretending that because you're a feminist, it's some kind of subversive statement. I love Snoop Dogg, despite his woman-hating lyrics. But I don't pretend listening to him.
That'll be censored. Oh, man. I forgot that was in there. Okay. So what's she going to say? She likes Snoop Dogg, but she doesn't approve that. But, oh, come on, lady.
Hey, but listen, she's actually saying something. I think I'm going to agree with her.
Oh, her premise that marriage can never be feminist. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Feminists can ruin a lot of marriages.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm agreeing with her. That's stop pretending that marriage is feminist. And so let's get back to what God designed it for.
Yep. All right, let's see what else this genius has to say.
Is a feminist act. And women should stop pretending that marriage is anything other than a tool for their own oppression. Anyway, as the late human rights lawyer Paula Ettelbrick said, marriage is a great institution, if you like living in institutions.
Why women should stop striving for equality. I've got a confession to make. I don't believe in equality. In fact, I find the whole idea pretty troubling.
Okay. What the heck?
That's the advertisement for the next video.
I know, but I just think that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Interesting. She ends in this quote, which I've heard it said a million different ways. Groucho Marx, Mae West said something very similar. You know, marriage is a great institution, but I'm not ready to live in an institution. It's really funny that feminists rail against marriage, but that makes sense because they're railing against God's created design, his created order. And of course, they're going to rail against what God has created in the very beginning because they recognize that what marriage represents. In fact, they recognize this far, far more, far easier, far better than many Christians. Many Christians think that they can just have egalitarianism in their marriage and everything will be okay. And that they'll actually be fulfilling what marriage is about. But everything we do about marriage, as she said, the father walking the bride down the aisle and saying, I give her away, that harkens back to what the scriptures teach us about parents giving their sons and daughters in marriage.
Well, didn't we have somebody comment on one of our episodes on Facebook, I think, about how there's some woman, and she was saying that she had a proud egalitarian marriage and her husband loves her like Jesus does or something like that. And it was like, no, if you have an egalitarian marriage, your husband does not love you like Jesus loves the church, because the church is in submission to Christ.
Yeah, and Christ leads the church. He does lay down his life.
Right.
But in doing so, he never also gave up his authority
right
over the church. He never said, church, boss me around.
Right, yeah.
nag me to death, church.
Yeah.
You can't even imagine that happening. So, but let's talk about this, because we named this segment, obviously, Feminism Ruins Everything. And actually, we're seeing this play out. I want to share some statistics with you. According to the U.S. Census data, you can look this up. In 1962, over half of 21-year-olds were married. So in 1962 in the United States, over half of 21-year-olds were married. In 2018, take a guess, Tony, on how many what percent of 21-year-olds were married?
So what was the previous stat?
It was over half.
Over half. Oh, yep. My guess is, even being optimistic, I don't know, a quarter?
You're overestimating.
Oh, I figured.
It's 8.8% of 21-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
In 2018. In 1962, 90% of people were married by the time they were 30 years old. You want to take a shot at that now?
Oh, man. 30%?
Hey, you nailed it right on, actually.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, it's not something to really celebrate, but yeah.
Right.
today, only 30% of young adults ages 18 to 34 are married. Wow. If we go back even a little bit, you know, it's even another decade. In 1950, the median age for a woman's first marriage was 20 years old. 2018, it's 28 years old.
Wow.
And then for men, it's 30 years old today.
Wow. That's amazing. Not in a good way amazing, but that's amazing.
Here's one more statistic that's actually kind of even that goes right along with it. Is that as the marriage rates have declined, the rate of unmarried couples living together has actually increased. And according again to the U.S. Census data, among those ages 18 to 24, cohabitation is actually now more prevalent than living with a spouse. Yeah. So 9% live with an unmarried partner in 2018 compared to 7% who live with a spouse.
Wow. Sad. That's a sad indication of society. That's for sure.
Yeah. And so marriage is kind of, it's at a really bad place right now in our society. Divorce rates are pretty high, especially among older generations, believe it or not. And younger generations are just not getting married. They're just not doing it. And that's contributing, we've already talked about this in another previous episode, but that's contributing to the birth rate in the United States being at an all-time low. In fact, I just read an article this past week that that again highlighted this fact that birth rates are so low.
Yeah. Sheesh. Well, marriage is at a pretty bad spot right now.
Well, here's a good thing. This is not the first time in history that this has occurred. So we can actually go back in history and we can learn from it. So marriage was actually in a bad state in the years leading up to the Protestant Reformation. What many people don't know, Tony, is that the Roman Church had so exalted singleness and celibacy, and marriage was in such a bad state, partially because they had this unbiblical view of divorce, so that they were the permanence view to like an extreme.
They had a lot of unbiblical views.
Yes. And so what that contributed was young women were sent to convents and young men to monasteries, and they were required to take a vow of celibacy, whether they're actually called to it by God or not. And the birth rate was low. The marriage rate was low. Sexual immorality, especially sodomy and prostitution, were growing, especially in these supposed celibate monasteries. One of the reformers said that they were more like a whorehouse than they were a church house.
Yeah, wow.
Even before the Protestant Reformation, there was a monk who wrote a book called The Book of Gomorrah, where he took the Romish system to task for its sexual immorality. He wrote very heavily against sodomy, especially among the priests and among the papacy. And he was They tried to buy him off, actually, and that didn't happen.
Good for him.
So you have, during this time then, so leading up to the Protestant Reformation, marriage is in a horrible state. And so what happens? The Protestant Reformation comes along, and this is what because we're always thinking about it in terms of the five solas and return to a right view of the gospel, which is obviously true. But right along with that, fueling all that is actually this return to biblical teaching on marriage. You have men like Martin Luther, they would actually take raiding parties into these convents and rescue women out of there and help them get married. And Martin Luther was actually, he married this one nun who they were going to try to marry to other people, and she insisted that she wanted to marry Martin Luther. So she married Luther, and during all this time, they're attacking the idea. Martin Luther is, John Calvin, other reformers are attacking the idea that singleness is a gift to be exalted. Rather, they taught that marriage actually is a duty.
So, like, for instance, what did Martin Luther have to say about it?
He says, after God made man and woman, he blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. From this passage, we may be assured that man and woman should and must come together in order to multiply. Now, this ordinance is inflexible and not to be despised and made fun of, since God gives it to his blessing and does something over and above the act of creation. Hence, as it is not within my power not to be a man, so it's not my prerogative to be without a woman. Again, as it's not in your power not to be a woman, so it's not your prerogative to be without a man. For it's not a matter of free choice or decision, but a natural and necessary thing that whatever is a man must have a woman, and whatever is a woman must have a man. For this word which God speaks, be fruitful and multiply, is not a command. It's more than a command, namely a divine ordinance which is not our prerogative to hinder or ignore. Rather, it's just as necessary as the fact that I'm a man, and more necessary than sleeping and waking, eating and drinking, and this is Martin Luther, emptying the bowels and the bladder.
Yeah, Martin Luther.
He says this, that whenever a man tries to resist this, it remains irresistible nonetheless and goes its way through fornication, adultery, and secret sins. For this is a matter of nature and not of choice.
Well, and I think that's a... I hear a lot of people when you're trying to talk about, well, marriage, you know, you should get married. You know, I've even heard it on the main Cross Politic episode. I've heard people, or not heard, but I've read in comments and stuff, you know, that when they say at the end, you know, if you're not married, get, you know, if you're single, get married, you know, and have children. And I've heard people being like, well, what if people have the gifts of singleness? Because everybody always wants the exception. And they'll bring up Paul and saying that people should be like him. He wished that people would be like him. They always bring up that thing and everything too. And I remember I had somebody ask me once, who's single, do you think I have the gifts of singleness? And I said, are you attracted to women? He said, yeah. And I said, do you want to get married? He said, yeah. I said, you don't have the gifts of singleness.
Exactly.
It's a pretty easy one to figure out, you know. Why don't we talk about that for a minute? Why don't we talk about singleness? Why don't we talk about, or the actual gift of singleness? And
well, here's the thing. I'm going to push back on you. It's not actually the gift of singleness. It's the gift of celibacy. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important distinction, because in our day and age, people were saying, well, you know, yeah, singleness would be great. I can do a little bit, few more things for God. I can take some time in my 20s, take some time off and travel the world.
To be fair to myself, I'm using the phrase that everybody uses when they talk about that, because that's what you hear in evangelical circles.
Sure. But again, that's why I'm careful to point out it's actually not the gift of singleness. I know even people mention that. Mm-hmm. It's a gift of celibacy. Mm-hmm. And you know, for instance, that if you want to do Bible story time with Pastor Joseph again, Matthew chapter 19 is a very good look at this. The Pharisees come trying to test Jesus, if you remember this, whether it's lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason. And he know what he does. He points them back to the garden. He points them back to the very beginning when it says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Jesus says, you know, what God's joined together, let no man separate. There's actually force there within him speaking there that we often kind of gloss over. We see the force of not separating. We don't see the force of actually God joining together, that there's actually within the passage of Genesis, we just see that God created man incomplete without the woman and puts them together. And so the very natural thing for them is that a man leaves his wife and mother, not leaves his wife, sorry, leaves his father and mother to be joined to his wife. And they become flesh. So God's putting them together. No one's to separate it. And then the Pharisees are all like, yeah, but didn't Moses tell us we can get a divorce? And Jesus says, I always like how Jesus answers the Pharisees, because they want to ask like abstract questions. But instead, Jesus says, because of your hardness of heart, mm-hmm. Moses permitted you to divorce your wife. So he turns it on them. And then he says, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. And then his disciples are all like, oh, man, if the relationship of the man with his wife is like this, it's probably better not to marry. Right. Yeah. They're kind of like, you know, if marriage is permanent, you know, we might marry one of those nagging wives that Proverbs talks about. Wouldn't mm-hmm. it be better not to get married? Or maybe I ought to wait until I have everything together. I've had my fun. You know, it's so weighty. I just got out of high school. I haven't had a chance to travel the world, do my own thing. I better steer clear of marriage. It'd be better for me to do that, right? I'm not ready. And does Jesus say, yep, you're right. It's better for you to be single, apostles. Is that his answer?
Nope.
So here's his answer. His answer is, not everyone can receive this saying that you're saying. This thing that you're saying is not for everybody. In fact, it's only for a few people. It's only for those who were born eunuchs, those who were made eunuchs by men, and those who were eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom. Three types of people are exempt then from marriage, is what Jesus is saying. There's only three people that can receive this teaching to be exempt. One are people that are born that way, so they have birth defects that keep them from sexual relationships. The second group are those who are made eunuchs by force. We don't have a lot of those.
Right.
And then the third group are those who are eunuchs for the kingdom. And going along with the context there, these are people who cannot have sex. They can't get married. They can't get married because God has not gifted them with the desire to get married. So for them, marriage is impossible because they've been called and equipped to something else. Martin Luther says that not even one person in 1,000 has this calling to be a eunuch. If you can think, are there anybody in the Bible that you think of that might have had that calling?
Not too many. First one that comes to mind would be the Apostle Paul.
Yeah, you got Paul, maybe John the Baptist. Jeremiah, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many.
Yeah, of all the people in the Bible. And you notice these people, Jeremiah, John the Baptist, the Apostle Paul, they were called to very specific tasks, not just putting off marriage so they could spend their late teens, their 20s and 30s on themselves. They're not putting off marriage to take short-term trips or to hang out with their buds.
Well, John just wanted to go out in the desert and just hang out with the animals and the locusts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a fun time. It was a fun time for him.
Yeah. So then another passage people point to is 1 Corinthians 7, which, you know, Paul says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. And we're all like, well, that means that he's saying it's good not to get married. Well, it's good if you have that calling. It's not good, though, if you're burning. If you're burning, if you have sexual desire, he says, let every man have his own wife and every woman have her own husband. Let them marry. You know, the one thing that we don't think about when it comes to dealing with the issue of lust is the one thing mentioned here, right? We've got people, that young men that are burning with lust and desire. Maybe they're struggling with keeping their eyes from looking at things. And we try to give them everything but what is mentioned here. Mm-hmm. One person I read said it's kind of like telling somebody that they've got to stop sinning before we can share the gospel to them. Mm-hmm. Or I like to say it's kind of like wiping before you poop.
Oh, man. Someone's going to make a meme out of that one.
So the answer that God gives for people dealing with lust and struggling with this is marriage. It's get married and be committed and have sex with your wife and have children. Be responsible.
And a good way to bond with your wife is to have kids. So I got married young for our culture. I was 22. She was 21. We had known each other 2 months and we got married. And everybody probably thought we were never going to make it. I'm not saying everybody's going to do the 2 month dating thing, but I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to make apologies. We've been married for 13 years this year and we're happy. And I'm glad that it happened the way it did. So one thing that happened with us, though, is we waited a while to have kids. We kind of bought into the cultural notion, kids are going to ruin your marriage. Okay, well, that's not true. I really wish we would have had kids earlier. So I'm going to tell you young men that are listening, get married and have babies right away. Okay, don't wait. It's not going to ruin your marriage. It's going to actually make you closer with your wife. It will. It grows you up real quick, makes you into a man much quicker. And it's good for your marriage. It's what marriage is for. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be on the line with a young man who got married quite young. We're going to talk with him about his decision-making process, how his upbringing affected that, and how his marriage has gone since. I think that the young men listening will be very much intrigued by what this young man has to say. So stick around. You are on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, and you are listening to The Patriarchy. We'll be right back.
Reach the voicemail of the Patriarchy Podcast. Leave your name, number, and message after the beep. Hey, Joseph. Hey, man, it's Tony. I ran out of gas on the way to your house. I'm going to text you the closest address to where I am. If you can grab a gas can, that'd be great. I'm just look for the baby blue minivan on the side of the road. Okay, see you soon. Bye.
I just listened to one of your episodes on iTunes. I just want to say how sickened I am by the filthy YouTube misogynist panel. I don't need a man to be fulfilled as a woman. I'm perfectly happy with my 2 cartons of cigarettes every day and my 11 cats. So you two can just...
Message deleted.
Hi guys, this is Leonard from the Matriarchy. My special co-host friend Todd and I just wanted to invite you guys to our annual gender-neutral dinner at the Church of Jesus Loves You So Much. It's gonna be great. Polly, the trans parent, is attending, so we just ask that this year you don't pile crackers on his dinner plate and tell him that he only gets real food if he acts like a real man. He's kind of salty about that still, Joseph. Anyways, hope to see you two there. Toodles.
What is this, a joke?
I was given this number as the number for Reconstructionist Radio. This does not sound like Reconstructionist Radio. It sounds manly and biblical. I was looking for Reconstructionist Radio, not this. I'll call back.
End of messages.
We are on the line with Robert R.J. Hoyle. He's from Dinwiddie, Virginia. He lives on his family farm, works for the family civil contracting business. He married his wife, Rachel, in 2012 at the age of 18. Together, they run a small dairy business, and they have four kids and a fifth on the way. Robert, welcome to the Patriarchy.
Thank you.
So, Robert, or R.J., I'll call you that. It's good to have you on here. First question for you. Being a racist was not enough. You had to be a sexist too by coming on the Patriarchy.
Yeah, I go all the way. I mean, there's no holds barred. I'm a homophobic bigot too, so make sure you get it right.
Okay.
All right.
RJ, we're glad to have you on here. You're a young man. We read your bio here. Said you got married. How old were you when you got married?
18 and just over 6 months.
18 and 6 months. How old was your wife, if we're allowed to ask?
She is exactly 3 years older than I am.
Oh, wow. So, you were going up.
Yes, sir. It'd be hard to go down and keep it legal.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We don't want to add that to your list of stuff.
Well, hey, we wanted to have you on today because we're talking about marriage. And we were just talking about how men are waiting later and later to get married. Even up to the age of 30, most men aren't married at this point. We know that you got married at the age of 18. So why don't you give a little background for our listeners as to what your upbringing was like and what led you to make that decision to get married at 18?
Yeah, well, it really starts with my dad. My dad graduated high school in Dinwiddie. Back, I think, 1982. He was high school valedictorian. I mean, you know, super bright guy. And everybody told him, you know, hey, you've got to go to college. But that's not what he did. He started his own business, started small just by himself, managed to build from there. And so at this point, you know, he's very well known all through Richmond. And I grew up working for him. My mom was first generation homeschooling. Nobody in the family had homeschooled before, either her family or my dad's family. But they were pretty supportive of her doing that, and me and I have one younger brother. We were homeschooled growing up, so by 8 or 9 years old, you know, I would go to work with Dad a day or two a week, you know, and just pick up sticks off a lot we just cleared, or, you know, sweep up sidewalks while we were laying pipe, you know, just any little thing like that I could do. And Mom and Dad always really, really instilled a pretty serious work ethic in me, which has probably been the chief thing that's, you know, really formulated my life, which is a sense of duty. You know, that you need to get up in the morning, lace your boots up, get to work. You know, God's going to provide for you, but he expects you to work hard every day. So I came up working in the business. With being homeschooled, I had the opportunity to do a little bit of dual enrollment, take a few business management classes at a community college in Richmond, and graduate high school and all that by the time I was 17. So I started working full-time at that point once I got finished in community college and everything. No degree, just a couple of sessions to pick up a few business management points. And with my high school education and all that, came out of that, started working full-time at 17. With that being the case, you know, I got married when I turned 18. I'd known Rachel for about 5 years at that point. Her family lives about 30 minutes from our place.
Was it an arranged marriage or?
Well, I mean, in seriousness, her parents had talked to my parents a lot over the couple of years previous that they would love to see that happen, but none of that was known to me at the time. So I had been 18 for like maybe a week, and my mom's always in the kitchen, you know, real, you know, great mother type person, so she's always in the kitchen. So I was lacing my boots up to go out one day. I think me and Dad were going to take down a few trees around the farm, and I just made the comment to Mom. I said, you know, I'm 18 now. I said, I think I'm going to get married this year. And I said, I really like Rachel. I said, what do you think about that? And she said, well, we've always hoped that's what you would say. So that was about that. And we got married about 6 months later. So
after your conversation with your mother, you just went straight to Rachel and asked her to marry you, right?
Well, no. What I did was I went and talked to her dad. And, well, actually, it's been 8 years ago here, so it's memory slipping. But what I went and I talked to her. Where our family had dinner with their family one evening, and so after dinner, she had gone out to take care of a few farm chores because they had cows as well. And so I went with her. And while we were down there feeding the cows, I said to her, I said, is it all right with you if I ask your dad if I, see you regularly with the idea of getting married? She didn't act too excited at the time. She said, yeah, that'd be all right. So I later found out she didn't act too excited because she's been hoping that's what I'd say for a couple of years, too. So she didn't want to seem overeager, thought it'd be unladylike. But, so I asked her dad 7 days after that. I said, Mr. Wright, would be okay if I see your daughter with the idea of getting married? And I guess he didn't take me that seriously since I was so young and, I don't know. He just said, yeah, sure, that's fine. So he was okay with that. And 6 months later, she was mine.
So at a young age, since you're 18, I feel like a lot of, at least right now, young men at 18 have no idea what they want to do other than probably play video games and do nothing important. So you seem to have a different outlook on the world. So how did you know at that point that you were ready to get married, that you wanted to get married?
Well, I guess the Lord was looking out for me, number one. And number two is I really had always interpreted it as a sense of duty to, carry on the name of the family and to grow it. So I was eager for the opportunity to get to add children to the, the overall family, multi-generational, the Hoyle name. I was looking forward to being able to further establish that and, pray the Lord would bless me with, a crop of healthy children. In fact, one of the only things that I talked with Rachel about before we got married is I said, I do not believe that the use of artificial birth control for non-serious health situations is legitimate. And do you agree with me about that? Because that would mean that we would have a lot of children. And she agreed with it. I don't know how seriously she thought about that up until that point, but she didn't have any qualms with that. Agreed with me on that. And so, it was largely a sense of duty, as the way I read the Bible and understood my Christian faith and my duty to my family was to get married and procreate.
So you keep talking, you've mentioned this word duty. Is this something your parents instilled in you?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, from an early age, God made Adam to work. Work was given to Adam before sin, even before Eve. So, God made Adam to work, and then, sin marred that work, but, the work still goes on. Of course, the increase of the labors aren't our own. We don't depend on ourselves for our providence, but God made us to work. Man ultimately finds his calling and his, identity is a bit of a, psychoanalytic word, but he really finds his calling before the Lord, his true vocation in his work. So, the family has had a work and a purpose growing up, and that was involved in, my dad's vocation. My mom worked for the business. My grandfather's worked for the business. There were, other employees outside the family as well, but, the business kind of sustained the family, and the whole family was engaged in that. So it was an easy thing for me. I'd always grown up in that, so it was going to be, stepping into that in an enlarged role as I got older. And, just a sense of that whole kind of sense of duty, grew right into establishing my own, nuclear family within the greater, generational level of the family.
So why do you think that other younger men right now are not considering this?
Well, I mean, I must say right off that I was extremely blessed to have the grounding that I did, just in my upbringing. My parents had given me a good education at home, good religious instruction. So, they had kind of pointed me in that direction. So it was really what came natural to me. There was never any sense of aversion to hard work or to duties or, put things off till tomorrow. The attitude was always, well, if you got to do it, you might as well do it today. So, that was kind of the attitude that I took towards that. Whereas, a lot of people have the attitude of, Huey Lewis in the news, we're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time kind of thing. So putting off, things that seem like work, I guess, is, what people tend to gravitate towards in today's culture.
Did you get much pushback getting married young? And what kind of you? How many children you have now?
I have four currently,
and one on the way, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, awesome. Congratulations on that. So, yeah, what kind of pushback have you received any from, I don't know, extended family, anything like that? You're too young to get married, or you're too young to have children, that kind of thing.
Not really. Our extended family is all fairly close. You know, I have a lot of aunts and uncles and, you know, grandparents and, you know, everything like that is all around, very close. So I grew up knowing them. And, I mean, to be honest, I've always been fairly serious. So I've always struggled to have a lot of friends close to my own age. So as far as peer friends, you know, with my own age, I really didn't have very many, really hardly any at all. And of course, you know, most of my older members of my family and the community around us, you know, which is pretty close to the community, they all knew that I was, you know, had grown up being serious. So that really, I don't think, surprised them at all. And nobody really ever, you know, said anything except, hey, this looks like a great, you know, great move for you.
So your friends around the time when you were 18, were they of the same kind of thought process as you? Were they looking to get married right away, or did they get married right away?
No, well, like I say, I never grew up. I mean, I was, of course, with people. I don't want to, you know, contribute to that social stereotype of homeschooling. But I just never really made a ton of friends when I was younger because they were more into, you know, things that I considered to be goofy or loathsome. I was either trying to, you know, work or, you know, learn, you know, pursue an education or work, whereas, you know, everybody else was, you know, doing something that I didn't really have a lot of interest in. So I didn't have a lot of friends my own age. Most of my friends were anywhere between 40 and 60 years my elder. So, you know, the mindset there, I guess, would be one that they imported, you know, from kind of an older day.
So, RJ, you've got children of your own. You've been instilled with this duty and this mindset of passing on your family name, building up your home, being faithful. And you built your own house, right?
Yes, I did. I mean, I didn't drive every nail myself. I subcontracted out a few parts, but I general contracted the whole process, and then I did quite a bit of the work by myself, yes.
Let me ask you this. How are you going to pass this on to your kids so that this you continue this multi-generational mindset? What are some of the things that you're already doing?
Well, the primary one is prayer. I try to mention my children's name in prayer every day, at least several times to the Lord. And the second one is involving them with me in things as much as possible. I try to take time. I, you know, of course, your productivity drops when you have a bunch of little kids around you doing things, especially, you know, we've got 50,000-pound excavators, you know, three-axle trucks. You have to be careful having little children around. And I do a lot of carpentry work, smaller things as well. But I try to bring them with me as much as possible, even at a very little age. I let them ride on a piece of equipment with me, or, you know, just hold a rake or a shovel and do things with me and see how it's done. And, you know, instill in them the sense of purpose that comes from working and doing things for one another, being kind to each other at a young age, and how that, you know, grows into your sense of duty to be faithful before the Lord, and that he put us here to tend the garden and to till the earth. And that, you know, cultivation is our task. And, you know, cultivation can look like anything from hoeing potatoes in the garden to, you know, engineering computer software to run an airplane or an excavator. But whatever their particular vocational calling is, that's man's chief end, is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. And that comes out through our hands.
So we have some young men. We have some men that are actually your age and men that are younger that listen to our podcast and are listening right now. And they're not married, they're single men. What would your advice to be to them right now as they're either twofold questions? So your advice to the men that are listening that are not yet serious about looking for marriage, maybe thinking they need to wait. And then the other men, the second part, would be the men that right now are looking to get married.
Yeah. Well, primarily, my first thing would be to say that you have to establish yourself in a vocation before getting marriage. And that goes right back to Genesis, whereas Adam was created and given a creation purpose. And then once he had his purpose, then God saw that he needed a helper for that purpose, for that vocation that he was given. So I think it's wise to take a wife in the context of what your life's direction is. And it can be very hard to ascertain your life's direction before you're established in your vocation. And, you know, by established in the vocation, I don't mean, you know, that you have a PhD, you're making $100,000 a year, whatever. I was no way near close to those things when I got married, but I knew what I was going to do with my life, and I knew where I was going. And so I was able to look for a woman who complemented those things, because the vocation of the husband will be the vocation of the family. If the husband's a pastor, then she's the pastor's wife. If the husband eats dirt like I do, then, you know, she's the dirt digger's wife. And, you know, so, you know, it's not really proper for the wife to have a vocational calling that tugs away from that of the overall family. the family is a trust, and everybody chips into that, and everybody gets out of that. So primarily, I would have to say, if you're not even sure about anything, establishing yourself in a vocation before the Lord is tops. If you're pursuing marriage, then the quality of women in America today is not that amazing. So you have to be very careful. The main thing I could say is don't beg, don't throw yourself away. Don't pick a girl who's going to want you to please her, you to bend your life to fit her. I think it's Doug Wilson who I've heard say that the purpose of marriage is to change a young lady's plans. She needs to be willing to, fit into your calling and your purpose. And of course, that purpose and that calling in your life should build up the family and give her the place where she's really going to be able to grow and develop into exactly what the Lord wants her to be as a homemaker and a mother and your helper. So you have to have that context for her to come into. It's very difficult to choose a wife, I think, effectively if you're kind of just blowing around in the wind. And then you also want to make sure, as you're looking for a wife, you want one who's not loud, and, not too. I think a big thing would be to look for me is in how she treats her father, because she's largely going to start treating you the same way she treats her father.
That's an excellent point. Well, hey, as we're wrapping up this interview here, if somebody's listening and they wanted to get in contact with you, maybe they had some other questions, maybe you got them thinking, how could they do that? Where can they find you?
The best way to do that would probably be through my email account. I'm giving you my email. It's Virginia Reform, and that is the word Virginia, all lowercase. Reform is R-E-F-O-R-M, 1993@gmail.com. So again, that's Virginia Reform, 1993@gmail.com.
Great. Well, RJ, thanks for coming on, and thanks for everything you've been saying. I think that there's going to be some young men listening that I really hope will be encouraged and spurned on to make some changes in their lives.
Yeah, and if you have just a second there as a parting word, I've been putting a lot of thought into it and talking with Rachel, because to be honest, we were thinking about it with our 7th anniversary. It's been difficult the first 7 years. Money has been tight, bounced around, living a couple different places in the community, before we built the house. So always making ends meet has been difficult. So the thought of, do you wait until you're a little bit more established before you get married? And I think the answer to that is no. You have to, get married, get started, get established with the wife of your youth, and the Lord will provide for you. You have to be faithful to the Lord's commands, and He'll provide for you. Your providence doesn't come from your own hands, but the temptation to wait, to put it off, until you have more money, until it's easier, whatever, to be there. But we're happy with the decision that we made. It's hard. It takes a lot of work. It's tiring. But better to put the work in now than when you're much older.
Good stuff, man. Well, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
All righty.
That was RJ Hoyle, and you are on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, and you're listening to The Patriarchy. We'll be right back. Due to possible copyright infringement and lack of funding, we now present to you Frank Sinatra's Love and Marriage, now performed by Pastor Joseph Randall Spurgeon.
Love and marriage, they go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
And we're back. Hey, Warner Brothers isn't going to ban us in 249 countries for that. Or I don't know who actually owns that song, but they might. But I don't know. They might. They might hear it and still. Maybe they'll sign you. Maybe
somebody should ban that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Maybe we'll get a record deal or something. I don't think so. All right. So that was a great interview. I enjoyed that very much. I hope that a lot of people listening will, especially our younger, the younger men that are single still, I hope you'll take that to heart, what we just listened to RJ talk about there. So we've been talking about that marriage is a gift and a command, but it takes two to tango. So if it's a gift and a command, but there's another party involved, how is that actually a command or a duty?
Well, you're right. Here's the question. It's complicated. We're not saying that this is just so simple that, I'm a young man, I want to get married, and, well, tomorrow I'll make it happen.
You don't just go down to the marriage office and put in your application. It gets approved and come back.
Yeah. So it is complex. And there's a lot of things feeding into the reason that people are not getting married right now. And so you're going to be like, ah, gotcha. If I don't have the power to do it on my own, then it must not be a duty or a command from God. So stuff it, right? Let me ask you this, Tony. Which one of the commandments of God are you able to fulfill on your own without his grace and mercy?
All of them. No, I'm not an Arminianist. I probably triggered somebody with that comment. None of them. Yeah.
All right. So, and who of our listeners is able to obey God for even a moment without the power of God to do so?
Not a single one.
So why would marriage be any different?
Bingo.
So if it's a duty from God, it's also a gift from God, and it takes the provision of God to complete it. And so what God commands, we need to do like Augustine of old asked, for God to grant us the ability to do what he asks. And so when it comes to a young man out there who's like, okay, I want to get married, and I know it's a command and obligation, and I'm striving for that, but I'm just not married. Maybe it's this gift. I'm gifted here with singleness. Well, no, you're right now, you have an affliction. You've received an affliction by God, and God in his hidden decree has not given you marriage right now. But we do know what his revealed will for you, his moral will for you is, that you are to get married. And so what do when you're faced with an affliction? You do what all Christians do, is you don't grow bitter towards God. You cry out to God, and you pour out your heart to God. If you remember Hannah in the Bible, she was afflicted with barrenness, not able to have a child. And she didn't turn around and say, well, this is a gift. This is a special gift. I've got a special gift. Instead, she saw it for what it is, and she went and she cried out and said, this is an affliction. God, help me. She wept and she prayed bitterly. She prayed to God. And so what I would do is encourage the young man who's struggling through all this, is looking for marriage, cry out to God, plead with God. And then, secondly, I would ask him, what are the things that you're doing in your life that are showing obedience to God and showing you, pressing you on to find a wife? We don't want you to come away from this episode making marriage your only goal and like you become like obsessed with a woman.
Right, right.
What we want you to do is to begin to build your household, to get your things in line, not as if you have to have everything in line. Like that's a faulty thing. In fact, Martin Luther, he says this, and I want to read this. He says, we have before us one big, strong objection to answer. And he says, it would be a fine thing to be married, but how will I support myself? I have nothing. Take a wife and live on that? Undoubtedly, this is the greatest obstacle to marriage. It's above all which prevents and breaks up marriage. It's the chief excuse for fornication. And he says, what shall I say to this objection? He says, it shows lack of faith and doubt of God's goodness and truth. It's therefore no wonder that where faith is lacking, nothing but fornication and all manner of misfortune follow. They're lacking in this, and they want to be sure first of their material resources. But then he says, let the heathens go their own way. We'll not argue with them. If they should be lucky enough to obtain wives, their marriages would still be unchristian and without faith. But he says they trust in God as long as they know that they do not need him and that they are well supplied. He who would enter into wedlock as a Christian must not be ashamed of being poor and despised and doing insignificant work. He should take satisfaction in this. First, that his status and occupation are pleasing to God. And second, that God will most certainly provide for him if only he does his job to the best of his ability. And that if he cannot be a squire or a prince, he is a manservant or a maidservant. And so he says, to sum up this matter, is that a young man should marry, find something to do and to work at it, and then let him strike out in God's name and get married. And so the point being is you don't have to have everything put together, your 50-year plan of your life all laid out and on your way, and this already have your house and everything built and everything all together. Instead, what you got to do is find what God's called you to, start working at that, and then also find you a woman that's willing to come along and help you actually make that happen, to build a house.
Well, on a previous episode, we talked about, with Michael Foster from It's Good to Be a Man, about that men are success objects, right? We're talking about that women were looking for that. I think some people misinterpret that means that a man has to have all of his, you know, everything together, like you're saying, that what we don't need to have is that everything has to be together. You have to have your house. You have to have the 50-year plan. You have to have the retirement, all of that. No, more so what it is that a woman's looking for a man who's going to provide some kind of stability for her, that when hard times come, whether he's rich or poor, that he's going to provide for her, that he's going to take care of her. And so it kind of brings me to my next point, which is that there a lot of young men, I think, on the flip side of that, looking for a woman who's got it all together too. You know, they're looking for their wife who's going to be, you know, but what she's going to be like 10, 20 years down the road. They're looking for the woman who agrees with them on every single theological point, everywhere. But what they ought to be looking for is a woman who loves God, obviously, first and foremost, but that a woman that's going to support her man, a woman that's going to submit to him, even when she disagrees with him, and do it joyfully, not grumbling, and that can be led by him, that's going to be part of his household and a joyful part of his household. And God will grow both the man and the woman as you go in marriage. I mean, the thing that I think the young man who's looking for that woman 10 years down the road right now doesn't understand is he's not 10 years down the road right now. He's not the man he's going to be by the time she's the woman she's going to be yet. He has to get there too. And so it just brings it back around to everything you were just saying, which is that, and to the quote from Martin Luther, is that we have to have faith. We have to have faith and trust God, that God will provide not just financially for us, but that God will provide everything we need, that God will provide the growth, God will provide the sanctification in our lives, that God will provide the changes necessary to make for a good marriage.
Absolutely. Faith is the key. Without faith, it's impossible to please God.
And that, friends, is the end of this episode. If you are not yet a Fight Laugh Feast Club member, go to fightlaughfeast.com and click to sign up to become a member and use the code PATRIARCHY. It supports us and it supports the network, and it gets you access to extra content, behind-the-scenes material. You get a t-shirt, you get coffee for a limited time, you get a mug, you get a bag of gold. No, you actually don't get a bag of gold, but you get the other stuff. So go to fightlaughfeast.com, click to sign up to become a member, and use the code PATRIARCHY. So until next time, if you have not bowed your knee to Christ, repent and believe. And if you have, this is our call to you. Build, fight, protect, lead. This is the Patriarchy.